What's up and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. On today's show, we have on Adam Williams, head baseball coach at Pickens High School. Adam is entering his 12th year as the head coach and 7th year at Pickens. Last season, he led the Dragons to the first ever region championship in school history and has won the school's only playoff series. Adam also coached travel ball for 10 years with Nelson Baseball School. And last summer, Williams helped pick the gold medal-winning 12U team as a trials coach. This year, Adam is looking forward to repeating the successes of the previous season as he continues to grow the Pickens baseball program. So on the show, we take a deep dive into culture and how he promotes it every single day. We spend quite a bit of time talking about how his players love being at the baseball field, and he goes over some of his best practices in practice. You're going to love this episode with Adam Williams. Adam, welcome to the show.
Man, thank you, Jonathan. Glad to be here. Glad we can sit down and talk ball and I can kind of brag on our program and brag on our kids.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm a fan from afar, and I know we've talked a little bit over the years, but you know, like anybody in the Twitter world that posts or reads or does anything on it, I feel like, you know, we're long lost friends. So I'm excited to really dig in a little deeper with you today. But let's talk a little bit about you. So this summer, you know, we all have at least a little bit of breathing room with we're not teaching classes every day. So what did the summer look like for you with, you know, learning or camps or summer ball? Like, just walk us through the last couple of months for you.
Well, this past summer was kind of a breath of fresh air for me. I have I've coached travel baseball for the past 10 years. And this summer, I took a summer off. I just needed to be a dad. Both of my girls were active. They play volleyball with the school and with the club, and we were just on the go all spring. And so this summer, I just kind of stepped back and was a dad, just drove my girls around, and we helped host games from a local tournament organization here. And we hosted a bunch of games in our field, and it's always pretty cool to go up there and talk to the people from out of town, people who didn't expect to see such a nice complex in the middle of the mountains in Georgia, and just kind of brag on our administration and our people. And it was just a good summer to kind of relax and not do anything baseball wise.
No, I really like that. Did you dig into any personal growth or anything that along those lines at all?
I ordered a set of books from the Jeff Jansen Leadership Series. And I kind of dug into the championship culture book. I'm reading right now How to Develop Relentless Competitors. And we're going to kind of move on to championship team building. You know, we feel like we have a pretty good team coming back. We have an older team. I'm not as worried as much about, you know, our ability to hit or catch and throw. And you're just trying to look for that edge. You're trying to look for the things outside of the game, a mentality, maybe some bonding type stuff to kind of bring your team together to kind of get over the hump we've kind of been in the past couple years and play a couple rounds deeper in the state playoffs.
I really like that. So with that, you know, we're heading into the fall and you're getting your guys back. You said you've been in school for, you know, a couple weeks now. So walk us through, you know, what the next couple of really weeks look like for you. And let's just kind of go through some player development that you're going to take this fall.
Well, we're actually meeting with our guys tomorrow. So our guys, we're getting back together, first team meeting tomorrow. We're just going to kind of lay out the standards and the expectations for them and kind of what off-season conditioning is going to look like. In Georgia, we're only allowed to have 4 kids per coach. So if we get out the bats and balls or work on any skill building, we can only have 4 kids at a time. So it really just kind of limits us to being in the weight room, you know, conditioning on this hill on campus that we got. And then, you know, just we're going to find ways to compete. You know, we got a couple of new games we're going to try. And then just break out some of the good old Hall of Fame classic games and let our kids compete in some conditioning aspects and just kind of grow as a competitor and grow as a human. One of the things we're going to stress tomorrow is kind of be our mantra for the fall is it's not what we're doing, it's how we're doing it. It's the old John Wooden quote. So we're really going to stress doing things with excellence, doing things together, and really work on just being present when we're here with the baseball team. We'll go for about an hour and a half after school, 2 days a week early, and then we'll add a day later in October, then we'll go 4 days in November. We have a unique situation in the fact that we have a turf field, but it's a softball-baseball combo turf field. Softball is a fall sport in Georgia. So we've got to respect the softball team and give their girls their space. And they're kind of in our facility right now. So it's a good time for us to just get stronger and faster and push our kids in the weight room.
No, I really like that. So you can't say, hey, we're going to try some new competitions and some old competitions without having to dig in a little bit deeper. So let me steal some of that stuff from you.
Well, we've got a new thing we're going to try, and this may be a horrible idea, but we're going to see how it goes. But we're going to take a dowel and put a couple pool noodles on the end and play a little jousting game in the middle of the basketball court to see who can push somebody out of the circle. We've got we're going to play some ultimate med ball. We'll play ultimate frisbee with a medicine ball. And then we've got some really cool tag games we play that the kids love to play. And we make them run around for 20, 30 minutes. They don't really realize they're getting conditioning. So it's probably one of our favorite ones is we play a tag game where everybody's it. And you can tag people in and out of the game. So if you get tagged, you got to take a knee. And then somebody can come back and tag you, and you can get up and run around and tag other people. You know, and every you know, 2 or 3 minutes or so, we'll close down the space of the field that we're playing on, and everybody outside of the space is out just to kind of reduce it down to one player. But, you know, they're running around trying to play tag and tag each other, and they don't even know that they're conditioning while they're doing it. They're having a blast.
Sure. Yeah, no, I like that a lot. So you mentioned the Jeff Jansen book, and I just purchased his one for the Leadership Council, and I'm trying to do a better job of like having an in-between with the staff and then the players, and just trying to promote more layers of leadership within our program, right? So I did purchase that one. So tell us a little bit about some of the things from his books that you might implement this fall or try to.
Well, here again, I think we go back to how you do things. You know, in baseball, everybody's got their opinion on how to swing a bat or how to throw a ball or how to run off-season conditioning. You know, I think the big thing there is how you do it. You know, not necessarily what you're doing. What are the standards to which you're working? You know, are you doing things with excellence? And I think one thing we're really going to stress is that excellence is an attitude. You know, give us everything you got. Give us the best effort you can give us and give us the best attitude you can give us. You're going to fail. We're not asking for perfection. We're asking for excellence. So just give us everything you got. And then, you know, within the program and building those layers, man, we're in a unique situation. We're a one-school county. We're a relatively small town, North Georgia. These kids have grown up with each other. They've known each other their whole lives. So, you know, as far as accountability or the kids, you know, saying something to another kid, they're not really scared or afraid to kind of step out, you know, because they're just talking to the kid they've played baseball with since they're 8 years old. It's a kid they've been in class with since they were babies. So, you know, the kids do a good job of holding each other accountable just because they're basically family with each other.
No, that's great. And, you know, they talk about teams that are really close. I mean, they spend a lot of time together, right? A lot of sweat equity. I mean, and it's really hard to hold somebody accountable when you don't know them very well. But like we talked a little bit about, you know, who are the people that you argue with the most? And it's your family, right? Your family or your best friends, because you know that you know them well enough to know that you care enough about them that you don't want to leave them where they're at. So I really like that. And you guys, like with the 4-on-1s, how do you like that? That would be really tough. So we get them an hour a day for baseball activity in the fall, and we could do that, you know, with the team. And it last year it was me mostly by myself. I had a little bit of help, but it was really nice to get all of our kids out at once and to be on a field all together so we could work on some of the team aspect whenever the weather was nice here. But the 4-on-1s are a little bit different. So tell us how you get a lot of 1-on-1, or I guess you could say 4-on-1 time. So you get more 1-on-1 time built within that, but how do you utilize that time well? Because I would have no idea how to do that.
Well, the rules do restrict you. I mean, there are a restrictive set of rules. It's done, you know, in order to free kids up to play other sports, and you know, and so that coaches don't nominate, you know, coaches of one sport don't dominate their time. So last year, you know, we're pushing 30, 35 kids after school. We're 40 minutes from Lake Point. We're 30 minutes from East Cobb. You know, our kids are getting the baseball aspect in the school. In the fall during school, they're going to practice. They're going to, they're playing in games on the weekend. So they're seeing the pitching. They're getting their at-bats in. So last year, we felt like we needed to do something a little different after school. So we were able to spend some time with Eugene Bleeker in 108 Performance. And we're now proud owners of about 10 water bags, about 8 water balls. And we are constantly learning how to rotate, be stronger in our rotation. And we use the absolute full out of the water bags to our benefit. And I think it helped us last year. You know, we pitched it really well. We hit close to 300 as a team. And I think some of that was just the strength and the rotation that we built through our use of water bags, water balls, PVC pipes, and countless other things that Eugene kind of brought to our program for us.
Mm-hmm. Sure. No, that's good. And so like, do you use that time as, it seems like you'd get a lot of individual work with those guys and kind of individual instruction. Is it a certain time limit that you have with those guys every day, or do you only get to see them a couple times a week? I mean, how's that work?
We will schedule our 4-on-1s within the workout calendar. So, you know, if we've moved on to like a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, we'll try to pull some kids out and do some defensive work or do some hitting work with them. We purchased a Rap Soto last year, so we really worked on consistent hard contact with the Rap Soto. So we'd get 4 kids out and we'd hit everything from, you know, wiffle balls to basketballs. Then we'd go back to the baseballs and really work on just hard, consistent contact, you know, measuring exit velocity off the Rap Soto. We don't have to really push kids to throw. Kids are going to throw here. We're going to leave, walk out of the school building right now, and there'll be 10 kids out there long tossing. So our kids do a great job of throwing on their own, and we kind of will hone in more on like the individual work as far as, you know, like 4-on-1s with our catchers, 4-on-1s with our middle infielders, 4-on-1s with our corner guys. You know, our outfield coach does a great job of just being really detail-oriented with our outfielders, so we give him his space. So I just kind of let my coaches go coach. I mean, and just get kids ready to play and do what they got to do in order to have the best season possible. But I don't think there's really any tricks to it. It's just you go out there and you get your drill series in, you get your work in, and then you can kind of teach them how to go through it. And they ended up, a lot of them end up going and doing it on their own.
No, I love that. And you know, you've done a good job when you can build that into the culture that they love to long toss. And I mean, you got to feed it, right? So I really like that. And so what does your fall season take you up to? November?
We can't start with a bat and ball till the first week of practice, which is going to be around Martin Luther King Day in January. So here again, our kids are playing on the weekends, they're playing with their travel teams. So between October, you know, middle of October through November to December, we actually kind of pull back on their arms a little bit. The kids that didn't play fall or the kids that played football, we'll start putting them on the mound. But some of the other kids, you know, we'll just do some work with the core velocity belt, just working on being on time with the slope of the mound and throwing med balls and things like that, just kind of give that arm a break. Because, you know, here in Georgia where we are, a kid can play the high school season from February to May and then turn right around and from summer to the end of July, then September 1st through the middle of October, they're playing fall. So at some point we have to pull back and we have to be the adults in the room. And we just scale our kids back in November, you know, like I know a lot of people throw, but it just doesn't work for us. Like those kids that pitched in the fall will start throwing pins in January. You know, it just kind of works for us. You use the calendar you have and you just be a good steward of the things you've been blessed with. And that's just kind of how we roll here at Pickens High School.
No, I like it. So it's easy to say, hey, this is a blanket thing of what everybody does, but this is what we do that works for our guys here. And, you know, that takes a lot of wisdom to do that. So when can you start team practices?
We can start usually the Monday of Martin Luther King. I think it's January 18th in the, so don't hold me to that. But January 18th, that Monday of usually Martin Luther King Day is the first day of practice in Georgia.
Okay, perfect. So when you let's actually rewind, because I kind of want to know what your first meeting is going to be about. So you mentioned that you're going to meet with your guys next week and talk about your standards and rules. Give us a peek into what that meeting is going to look like. Are you going to be in front of the room? Do you have a PowerPoint? And then tell us a little bit about your rules and standards.
Well, yeah, it'll be in my classroom. We actually have a classroom in our facility, but here again, we can't get out there because softball is out there. But, you know, we'll just meet in my room with our guys. And then I'm just going to break it down. We kind of break down our season from last year. You know, we're going to show the kids how we performed in one-run games, two-run games, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we won the region for the first time in school history last year, and we're just going to let them know that 2023 is over and that 2024 is a blank slate. And if you want to repeat, you know, that dog pile we had in the middle of the field, it starts today. We're going to talk about how we do things. You know, it's not what we do, it's how we do it. And here again, we're going to do things with excellence. We're going to do them together, and we're going to be present when we do them. And we're just going to keep stressing those three things, and we're going to define those three things, and we're just going to hammer them in. You know, we kind of find a word for the year. You know, with this group a couple years ago, it was maturity. We had a very young group, and we hammered them for a whole school year on the word maturity. And I think they grew up and kind of got better. Then last year, our word was ownership. We needed people to own the program, take some ownership in it. And this year, the word we're going to hammer in there is excellence. You know, it's how well can we do something? And that's just what we're going to push them on. And I'll be honest with you, we're going to exercise, and we're going to lift, and we're going to do our water bag routine. But, you know, there may be days where we just go sort laundry just to see how well we can do it. You know, we have an older, more mature team. We're just going to see how well they can do it. Now, one caveat I got to put in here is I have a great school. I work in a great school. It's really good here. Every kid on my baseball team is in a weightlifting class. So I don't have to go in the weight room and do, you know, bench and squat and lunges and power cleans. They're getting that during the school day. We just go in and do baseball-focused stuff after school. So, like I said, we're just going to go and put our kids in situations and just challenge them on how well they can do it. You know, it's just a little extra work to be first class. You know, so we're just going to push them to find that little extra thing, whatever it is, and let's do it with excellence and be first class in everything we do.
No, I like that. So let's flash forward back to where we were earlier, which is practice number one. So, you know, what's your time frame in getting guys ready to play games? When's your first game?
We have 4 weeks from the start of practice to the first game.
Okay.
So it's 4 hard weeks. It's notorious for being late. You know, we get out of school at 2:15, and we'll practice from 2:15 to 6:37, and we'll go hard, really, really hard. But we've got to put a lot of stuff in a short amount of time. So prior to that, you know, when we come back from Thanksgiving, we usually start trying to really perfect the first 15 to 30 minutes of practice. The getting out of the school building to the facility, getting upstairs in the classroom, going over what we need to go over, to our, we call it flex and stretch, where we go through our dynamic warm-ups. And then we go into arm care. A lot of our water bag stuff, we'll go through a series of that to kind of get them hot. And then we'll go run bases before we ever throw. Okay. And our kids know that whatever we're working on base running wise that day is also, in a sense, arm care, because we've learned that kids don't do a good job of stretching. So we'll go run the bases just to get sweaty before we start throwing, get their body temperature up and get them moving. So if we can perfect that first 20 minutes of practice, first 30 minutes of practice, it usually helps things go really smooth on the first day of official practice. So we can go out there and do a lot of that, you know, as conditioning aspects before we ever pick up a baseball. And then we start throwing, and we hold them accountable for throwing. You know, good teams at 12-year-olds, if they're 12-year-old, they're a good team, they throw and catch. We hold our kids accountable for throwing and catching. You know, when you're getting loose, if you drop a ball or you throw a ball over their head, it's 5 push-ups. You know, just knock out 5 push-ups and go. It's not meant to belittle or put them down, but they got to know that I've got to be better at what I'm doing. Once we get through catching and throwing, we go into some, you know, individual work with our individual position coaches, you know, catchers with the catchers and middle guys with the middle infield coach. And then from there, we usually do some type of team defense, whether it's, you know, just a simple cut and relays drills, first and thirds, bunt defense, whatever. We'll go into some team aspect, and then we'll go into, you know, the offensive side of things. We're probably a little different, just the way our field's set up. We don't just sit out and bang balls on the field. Like, there's not a lot of feel-good BP here. Everything we do on the field is some type of game-like situation, whether we're doing inside drill, whether we're doing BP scrimmage, which I think is the best drill in baseball. All right, you know, we'll do the Clemson BP or, you know, whatever we call it, Dragon BP. We're on the field. It's 9 guys in a position. Base runners are live. You know, whatever we're working on that day is what we're working on. And, you know, if you want to feel good, you can go hit in a cage. But when we're on that field in January, we are playing the game in some form or fashion.
Oh, that's good. So with that, you know, how many games a week do you guys play during season?
We're allowed 30 games a week or 30 games a season. Okay. And so, you know, it's usually
30 games a week. That's a lot.
No. I don't have the pitching to do that.
But,
30 games in a season, and it usually comes out to, you know, somewhere to 3 to 4 games a week. Early, you know, you're trying to squeeze in an extra game or two. We're really excited this year. We're taking our kids to Hoover to play in the PG National Showdown. So that's going to give us 4 games at the end of the week. And then within region play, we play 3-game series. So we'll play everybody in our region 3 times in a week. So it's a Tuesday, Thursday, Friday schedule. We do that to eliminate all tiebreakers. At the end of the year, we feel like we got the 4 best teams. And I enjoy it because it makes you manage. It makes you use your bullpen. It makes you use your bench. And you've got to go out there and truly be good, you know, every night out. But if you do drop a game, it's not the end of the world, because you can win the series 2-1, still have the tiebreaker.
Sure. No, that's good. So with that, like, what do in-season practices look like? Because you're probably playing most days of the week. So what do you do to really not only – well, you talk about excellence and finding ways to continue to get better. So you're not wanting to do, like, hey, let's hit and get – but you're also wanting to balance energy levels. And that's something that, you know, we have to try and do here too, because we may play 4 or 5 games a week here too. So what have you found as like a balance of that? So let's say like a typical Wednesday practice, like 4 or 5 weeks into the season.
You know, a typical Wednesday practice, you know, if we played at home, we're going to pull up the video from our wear camera system and kind of go over some of the key plays or key moments in the game. And if we botched a rundown or we botched a bunt situation, we're going to go out there and work on what we didn't do well the night before. And then we'll probably just run through some individual position stuff, kind of take it easy on the kids' arms, and then roll in and hit in the cage and go home. If we have our JV there and they're not playing, we'll probably go and do a couple BP-type scrimmage situational stuff just to keep those the game fresh in their mind. You know, these kids, they kind of get a bad rep of, you know, they play games, but they don't know how to play the game. But I think the BP scrimmage allows you to stop and teach. And when the situation comes up, it really truly allows you to get with the whole team and kind of talk about what happened, where the communication broke down, where the read was bad. You know, it just allows you to teach and get the kids on the same page so they don't make that mistake in a game.
Yeah, I'm with you. So that's good. So you use that like as a teaching point before practice, or do you guys have something built in the middle of the day?
Yeah, usually before practice. We have a very, very nice facility, and we had some dead space, and we put a classroom up there. We got in pretty tight with some of the maintenance guys, and we know the guy that runs the surplus building here in the county, and we went over there and got about 15 tables and 30 chairs, and we have a classroom set up. My technology guy, you know, we take care of him, and I have a Promethean board up there. So we'll slow down and teach things upstairs in our classroom, you know, so the kids can see them, they can break it down. And sometimes that's just as good as going out there and walking through it on the field.
Mm-hmm. No doubt. And then, so with that, one of the things I want to do a better job of this year is making sure that, you know, our pitchers who are also two-way guys are getting more work like during the season, because it's kind of tough, because when you're playing most days, it's really tough to fit in, you know, your starting shortstop's bullpen in the middle of the week when, you know, he pitched on Monday, and then he may have to play infield on Tuesday, and then he's probably going to have to play infield Thursday, Friday, or Saturday. And so we experimented with like moving them to first or DHing them, trying to get them, you know, make sure that they're giving their arm a break at some point. But it's also like, do we take ground balls on that Wednesday and have them throw across, you know, 50, 60 throws, or should we utilize the bullpen for that? Or when do they throw a bullpen? You know what I mean? So it's really tough with those guys, because most of them are two-way guys. So I'd like to hear your thoughts on, you know, not that specific of a situation, but I'm sure you run into that too.
Well, our three pitchers are our three middle infielders, and it's going to be really nice, because I can tell you when one's pitching where the other two are playing right now. But, you know, we might do it different. I don't know that we built a lot of bullpens in during the week. We really try to hold our kids accountable to throwing. So when we throw, every kid has a plate. If you're a pitcher, we went on Epic Sports and bought 20 plates for like $5 a piece. You know, you can go spend that money and buy 20 t-shirts, but we bought 20 home plates, and our kids throw to a plate every day. So after they stretch it out, they bring it in, they're going to throw a flat ground. So we're constantly getting work to somebody squatted down behind the plate. Now, as far as throwing in the infield, there'll be days that we'll just catch and drop it in a bucket. You know, there are those days, and we really ask our kids and you know, get them to kind of give us a lot of feedback on where they are with their arm and how they're feeling that day. And, you know, if they're a little tender, we're not going to ask them to throw. But we usually ask them to get a pin in either the day before they pitch or 2 days before they pitch. So we're not like crazy pin guys. Like I said, we're constantly throwing. Our POs are constantly throwing to a target in our facility, usually on the Rapsodo. They go set that up. You know, I know I've we've got champagne problems here, but you know, we have a hitting Rapsodo and a pitching Rapsodo, and I'll be honest with you, those might have been two of the best investments I've ever bought, because all kids want to do now is hit and pitch. It's crazy. I didn't have to schedule a bullpen in the fall last year. Every kid wanted to throw in the Rapsodo. You know, my biggest thing was telling them to stop. You know, like, you fit 30 pitches. Let's stop and talk about some of this stuff and what it means. You know, and so now my POs are out working on spin. You know, the three guys are going to start and be in the middle for us. They do a really good job spinning it anyway, so there's nothing that they've got to go really, you know, kind of work on as far as like fastball spin or some curveball spin. They might need to kill some spin on a changeup, but you know, we can work on that in our long toss and our catch play series. So I don't think that we have anything earth shaking at all, other than we ask them to throw a pin either the day before or a couple of days before, whatever they're comfortable with, and they throw a little flat ground every day. And if a kid pitches on Tuesday or Thursday, because we play Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, if a kid pitches on Thursday, they're going to play in the middle of the infield on Friday. I think you just got to go out there and get hot and get sweaty. We have all the J-bands and the shoulder tubes. We've got all the toys. But it's just a matter of are you going to heat your body up? Are you going to get your blood flowing, get moving around, and let some of that, you know, the blood flush that stuff out and get ready to go throw again. I worry more about our guys in the summer when they pitch on Friday, you know, or pitch on Sunday, then don't pick up a ball again until the next Friday. You know, that worries me more than they are with us as far as throwing.
Sure.
No. And I'll tell you another thing, and this has always stuck with me. The first ever ABCA convention that I went to, I met one of my friends from high school, and my friend in high school played for Butch Thompson at Jeff State in Birmingham, Alabama. And he was like, we got to go meet Butch. We got to go meet Butch. I got to go find Butch and talk to him. And we weaved our way around through the convention center there in Nashville, and we wound up in a meeting of pitching coaches that I did not belong in. Derek Johnson, Fred Corral, Butch Thompson, they're all in there just, you know, kicking ideas off each other. And I asked those guys, as a high school coach, what's the one thing I can do to prepare my kids for college? And overwhelmingly, the response was, hold them accountable for throwing. When they get to us, they don't throw enough. So we really push our kids on throwing the baseball, and we throw every day. And our load is what it is, you know. And that might make a lot of people's skin crawl, but we've had kids go on to college and be successful. We've had kids at the pro level that's successful right now. So we just try to build that culture of throwing and just let them go.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. So how long do your typical practices take?
You know, like you said, you got to manage the kid. You know, early on, it's late. Baseball is one of those sports where, you know, you got to get everybody work on offense and defense. And, you know, it takes a while to run through batting practice. So early on, we're going to go 3 hours. But when the season starts and we start pulling things back, you know, with our situation and our facility, we can be in and out of there in an hour, hour and 15 minutes if it's a varsity-only practice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. So, all right. So let's say, you know, going into postseason, what does your postseason look like? Any changes that you make as far as practices go? What's your best advice on how do we win more consistently during that time?
Well, Jonathan, we've been beating the Sweet 16 the past 2 years in a row, so I'm trying to figure that out with you. But the postseason here in Georgia has changed over the years. You used to have a week between the end of the season and the first playoff game, and so you kind of went hard for a couple of days and scaled it back. But our season ended on Friday, and the first playoff game was on Monday this past year. So you just – came in on Sunday, which is something we don't really do. So you came in on Sunday and you had a light workout and you got ready to play. I think that as far as like practicing or getting ready, it's more about information. You know, we try to do our best on getting scouting reports and talking to people in other parts of the state to figure out what we're going to be up against. You know, what are we going to have to defend? What are we going to see on the mound? You know, we do a lot of that, and we just try to be really good at what we do. You know, at some point, you've just got to kind of double down what you do and get really good at it. This year, well, the past 2 years, really, we've just ran into an older team. You know, we've been beat 2 years now by a team full of seniors, and I had a team full of sophomores a couple years ago and a team full of juniors last year. So now it's our turn to be the older team, and we just hope that we learn from the past couple of years, and we can go out and kind of just be that older, tougher team that we've played the past couple of years.
Mm-hmm. No, it's, you know, I mean, we're all trying to strive to be the last one standing, right? And so even if we don't, we can always learn from those experiences. Yeah. Because
we're a rural school in the North Georgia Mountains. We've got about 1,300 kids. The county's about 30,000 people. You know, you're going to have your ups and downs. So you got to capitalize when you have a good group, and that's just what we're trying to do right now. And we're going to really try to capitalize this year because we think we're going to have a good team. But I'll be honest with you, the next year, 25, is going to be exciting to coach because you're going to watch kids grow and see kids step up and watch kids mature. And I think that's going to be a fun thing to do in 2025.
Oh, that's cool. So with that, I've got a couple different things, that random topics I'd love to go over with you. So what are some ways that, you know, you're consistently building culture within your program? So you've got, you know, we've all got like our standards and the different things that we want them to look like, but how are you consistently building that? So you talked like the Jeff Jansen books and I mentioned, you know, creating layers of leadership. What are some different ways that you felt like you've done a good job of, you know, teaching either leadership or getting the culture going in the right direction, whether that's, you know, you mentioned classroom sessions, different things like that. So what's some advice for me and then the guys listening who want to do a better job of that?
I think culture is probably a word that we never mention. We never mention the word culture, but our culture is very active. Like, it's very visible. You can come and see, you know, we have our set of core values. We talk about being dedicated, being tough, working hard, being uncommon, talk about family, you know, like we have our core covenants that we talk about. Then we usually have a one word focus. This year it's going to be excellence. We hammer that home. But as far as like rules and standards that are apparent and voiced, it was funny. I had your questionnaire pulled up in my first period class today and I asked a couple of my baseball players, I said, what are our standards? And, one of the kids is a senior that's been with us for a while. He said, be an adult, you know, and he was being serious. Like, our kids know that if you're going to miss practice, you have to come physically see me face to face and tell me you're going to miss practice. And if you can't find me, you have to have a phone call. There are no text messages to tell me you're going to miss practice. So you have to find me and tell me, you know. We don't have a lot of kids miss practice because they don't want to come look me in the eye and tell me they can't make it. Right. You know, if we ask a kid to do something, we expect them to do it. We bought every kid a lock for their locker in the locker room. And we would go through, either be me or one of my assistants, we would go through. And if they left their lock unlocked, we would take the lock off the locker and they owed us 50 push-ups to get the lock back. Here again, just a reminder, meet the standard. You know, if it's something serious, you know, we'll take away playing time. Funny story, we had a kid miss a game because he told me his Aunt Denise died. He was just all tore up over Aunt Denise. Well, I found his mom. I was like, man, I'm so sorry your sister died. And she was like, what are you talking about? Well, that kid didn't play the rest of the season. He got every foul ball, you know, that was hit. So we handle things accordingly. Fair's not always equal with kids sometimes. You know, we handle kids according to the situation, according to maybe some family stipulations that other people might not know about. Mm-hmm. But if we ask a kid to do it, you know, we're not going to ask them to do something outrageous, but we are going to hold them accountable to whether they've done or not. If the facility's not clean, we're not leaving till the facility's clean. You know, we give them a list of jobs. It's their job to do, and we'll get them out of the locker room and send them back out on the field to fix their, you know, sweep the dugout or whatever they're supposed to do. So it's just constantly managing your environment and just making sure that the kids are just doing what you ask them to do. And kind of like one of my players said, is just be a young adult, you know, go and do the things necessary for you to be successful at the, at, you know, outside of baseball.
Mm-hmm. No, I really like that. So with that, you know, it's living, it's breathing. Like I said, it's not, you know, words on a wall, and it's not just something that you're like, hey, what does this mean? And they're like, ah, I have no idea. So yeah. It sounds like you have a lot of conversations with your players. Do you guys have like formal meetings, or is it just like more informal? You're just trying to get to know them, trying to get to talk to them more.
I really try to find my guys and just ask them how they're doing. You know, just find them and talk to them. You know, kids just want to know you care. I mean, that sounds cliche, but like, you know, you see a kid, and you mention that they look like they've gotten taller over the summer. You know, just notice things, right? Like, hey, man, that you work out over the summer, that shirt looks like it's a medium, you know, like we're getting a little swole there. You know, they want to know that you care. And it's just it's something simple as how you doing, call them by their name, shake their hand, look them in the eye, and just ask them how their day goes. At the end of every practice, at the end of every meeting, I make sure I tell them I love them. Because, you know, I want to be the most positive part of their day. You know, sometimes these kids, we have kids that don't always go back home to the best situation, and we want baseball to be the hardest part of the day, but we also want it to be the most fun part of their day. Mm-hmm. And we want them to know that we truly do care about them. Sure. So we really work hard to feed them. Our booster club is great. We've never wanted for a meal, and we sit down and we break bread together a lot as a team. And I think that's very, very important in kind of just bringing our group together.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. So with that, you know, it's, man, it brings a lot of joy to us, you know, and it makes it worth it, especially because you're building, you know, I call it champions in life, and, you know, they're going to come back, they're going to remember how you made them feel. And, you know, they're never going to remember everything that you say. Like, I was telling some of our younger guys today, said, we may say this 1,000 times and they may get it once, but they're going to remember a lot of how you made them feel every single day.
Yeah, no doubt. And it's not always every kid, like not every kid flourishes in our program. Like we have some kids that have some hard time just kind of getting in and getting with our system. And I'm not saying like we're running some hard shit, but we let our kids know that they could easily go into this school building and be like everybody else, but not everybody else can play baseball. Like it takes a special person to come out here and commit and work as hard as we ask them to work and sweat like we ask them to sweat and be here on the weekends and be here on your breaks. There's a lot of people that can't do that. And you do this, and that's why you're a dude. And that's kind of our word in the program, is you got to be a dude. And we just ask a lot of our kids, and some kids just aren't willing to pay that price. But the kids that do really enjoy it, and they really enjoy the time in our program. And look, not every kid's going to play college. You know, we've got kids that are going to school at some of the highest levels in college baseball. But I've also got a kid that's on a pit crew of an Xfinity series car team trying to make his way to a pit crew on a NASCAR team. And he'll tell you, you know, these 18 to 20 hour days that he works sometimes, he wouldn't be able to do it if he wasn't a part of the program. And that's the kind of stuff that makes you proud. You know, the kids have kind of figured out what it takes to be successful, and they've learned it through your program.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. So I've got a couple, you know, quick hitters before we go. And, you know, I really loved having this conversation. We talked a lot about culture, talked a lot about, you know, just building that on a daily basis. And you know, I call, you know, long toss the arm farm. We talked about the arm farm quite a bit. So let me get your advice on a couple things. Actually, let me get your advice on this one. So, you know, with building those relationships, we all as a high school community, I hate that it's like this, but you say deal with parents. Like there are parents every single year that you're going to have to deal with. And, you know, or maybe you're lucky and maybe you never have any parent problems, but most people have, you know, even if it's just the email, that there are things that parents are a lot more involved. So give us some advice on, I don't want to say how you deal with parents, but that may not be the nicest way to put it, but you know, how do you deal with parents there?
I think the easiest way to, I mean, quote unquote, deal with parents is talk to parents. I make sure that when I have to be the admin on duty at a JV game, that I breeze through the stands and talk to parents, you know, and brag on their kid. You know, if you hear somebody say something positive about their kid, man, just pick up the phone and give them a call. I had a travel coach brag on one of my kids and call me and said, man, I really like your kid. He's my type of player. And well, I picked up the phone and called his dad and said, hey, man, listen, I got people calling and bragging on your son. So I think the easiest way to deal with parents is talk to parents. You know, as far as the email, my usual response is my planning period is from 11 to 2. And if you want to come up here and talk about this, you're more than welcome to come up here and talk about this. And that usually will nip that problem in the bud because everybody wants to email with you, but nobody wants to come up here and talk to you. But, you know, for the parents that do, I mean, just sit down and talk with them. You know, I think we as coaches, we get so defensive over, you know, a parent and their emotions or their, you know, their situation. But, you know, I'm a parent. I have two kids. And our parents are sending us their most prized possession, and they're asking us to take care of that prized possession and help their son grow. And I think it's just part of us as baseball coaches is we got to be good stewards of what we've been given. And part of that is just building that relationship, not only with the kid, but with the parents. So I'm going to meet with our kids tomorrow and go over our expectations. And then I'm going to go meet with their parents tomorrow night and go over the same expectations with them. And I'm going to sit around and answer any questions and you know, and listen to their concerns because, you know, it's their kid. You know, they're proud of their kid. They love their kid. And it's, like I said, it's their most prized possession. And they just want to see their kid do well. And sometimes you just got to empathize and sit back and listen to them and that's all it takes. And a lot of times we as baseball coaches or coaches in general, sometimes I think we see ghosts when it comes to parents. And we think, that, oh, this parent's going to be upset. Well, I mean, if they are, come in and talk about it. I mean, they hired me to win games here, and that's what I'm going to do. So really explain to the kid, to the parents, the program is first. You know, in my priority list is program, team, individual. And for you, the parent, I really understand because as a parent, it's individual, team, program. And so I'm going to do what's best for the program. And I understand you're going to do what's best for your kid. All right. But our common ground is the team. So let's work and see to come up with the best solution for this team this season.
Mm-hmm. No, that's really good. All right, so to the quick hitters. So what is your favorite team building activity?
I don't know that we have a team building activity. Like I said, we eat together a lot. But I think my favorite team building activity is just a good hard workout. You know, just getting sweaty together and kind of going in there and just letting everybody kind of see each other's sweat equity that they've kind of built and put together for a team. Whether it's, you know, a water bag circuit or running up down the hill or, you know, our Friday morning 6 a.m. workout. Just let everybody see that we're all making the same sacrifices and we're all playing on the same team.
Oh, I like that. Second one is, what is a drill that your players love that we can steal from you?
Definitely the hitting game. If the hitting game is on the practice schedule, everything before it will not go very well. This is a simple game. We split them up into three teams. We let them have a snake draft, and whoever picks last starts in the field. But you'll have two teams in there hitting. You have a batter in the box, and if they get a hit, they get a point, and they get another swing. If they don't get a hit, the other team comes in there, and they get their opportunity to get a hit and score points. And, you know, and it becomes a major trash-talking session. A little pressure gets built, and then you've got the defense out there making plays because they want to take hits away from everybody. And you've got POs in the outfield diving and catchers at third base chesting up balls. It just becomes a real fun environment. But if we put the hitting game on the practice schedule, you might as well just start with it because that's all they want to do. And this is, like I said, it's really, really simple. If you get a hit, you get another swing. If you don't get a hit, the next team comes in and they get a chance. You know, if they get a hit, they stay. If they don't, the next person on the other team, you know, just the next person in the lineup comes up to hit. And it's really simple. And I think it's really good for us because it really helps our kids visualize what's a hit and what's not. So I know that's kind of weird, but, like, you know, that Texas leaguer that, you know, is just as successful as that hard line drive to the outfield at some points. You know, it's going to get you to the same spot on the bases as squaring a ball up. You know, some days we'll go out there and we'll throw meatballs in there, and some days we'll go in there and challenge them a little bit with a little velocity. So it's just a matter of where we are in the season and what we're trying to accomplish. But if our go-to get everybody fired up is definitely the hitting game.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. And then I've got, what's the latest thing that you've learned that's made you better at your job?
So I'm very fortunate to be in a coaches group with a bunch of other like-minded coaches. It's a group they call ourselves the Nectons. I guess it really took off over COVID. But, you know, everybody goes to ABCA and everybody wants to learn. And I kind of steal a quote from a preacher in this area, a guy named Andy Stanley. And his quote is, life change happens in circles, not rows. You know, I think the biggest thing or the best thing for me is I've got a circle of friends, a circle of guys, and we hold each other accountable on being dad, being a teacher, being a coach. And then we also ask some baseball questions. But it's also pretty cool. Like two guys in the group just won a gold medal with the 12U team in USA Baseball, and Butch is about to head out with the 18-year-old team. And you know, we all kind of was there for Adam Mosley when he went through all that with the Alabama High School Athletic Association. But, you know, we kick around all kind of stuff from, you know, sheets as coffee choice to who you're going to cut a throw to the plate with a runner at second, nobody at first. You know, do you swing the third baseman in there to maybe play for the back pick? Or do you just play it traditional with your first baseman? So we kick around all kind of crazy different ideas. And I think that's one of the biggest things that has helped me kind of grow as a coach. You know, and we've always got people that ask, how do you get in your group? And be honest with you, it was an accident that I even got in there. But I think the best thing you can do is just get you a group of guys and go through life together. And it's been really interesting to have guys all over the United States, to see guys from South Carolina to California, and how everybody's problems are different, but yet they're all the same. And, you know, you can always come to some type of wise solution because you've kicked ideas around other people and heard other people's opinions, and you think you can go do what's best for you kind of based on how you just talked it through with your group.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. Yeah, man, there's a lot to unpack there, but I think you did a great job of that. And then, you know, this is my last one for you. What's one thing that you've implemented that you think has made the biggest impact in your program?
So in our facility, we had a bunch of dead space, and we put a classroom on one side, but on the other side, we put some carpet down and put a couple couches. We put a ping pong table, a foosball table, a Papa Shot basketball, a chessboard and a checkerboard, and a Galaga machine. And we put a whiteboard on the wall. And if you were the champion, your name goes on that whiteboard of whatever you're playing. And our kids, all they do is compete.
Yeah, that's great.
So if you're king of the ping pong table, your name goes up there. And they'll sit up there and play ping pong for an hour after practice to get their name on the board. And you'll hear that Galaga machine. You'll hear somebody pecking on that Galaga machine for an hour after practice. We even got a couple kids that will go up there and play a pretty mean chess game. So all of it was given to us. It was all a Facebook post. If you have a ping pong table or a foosball table, and next thing you know, our community is so generous that we were given a ping pong table, foosball table, Papa Shot. We have $0 invested in it. We bought a chess set. That was it. And that has been the best thing for us, because it's kind of put us up there. It's brought us closer together as a team. And all they do is hang out and compete. You know, we'll have to run kids off after practice because they'll want to sit up there and play. And it even got to the point where if you're going to play, you have to be dressed in your practice gear. Like, you can't be up there in your school clothes. Like, you got to get dressed first before you pick up a ping pong paddle. So, I mean, it's just kids want to get up there and play and compete and hang out and be just a group of guys and kind of our cool little boys club we've got upstairs in our facility.
Oh, that's cool. Well, Adam, I appreciate your time, man. And I loved getting to chop it up with you today. And I love that, you know, God, we talked so much culture stuff today and there's so much to take away. But if there's anybody else that, you know, wants to get a hold of you and wants to, you know, get your contact information, maybe ask you anything, what's the best way to do so?
You can email me, adamwilliams@pickenscountyschools.org, or just reach out to me on Twitter, @CoachWilliams on Twitter. I've been on Twitter since the inception of it. So I think I've got my 15th or 16th Twitter anniversary coming up. So, but yeah, so just reach out. You know, I love to talk baseball, and I'm willing to help anybody that's got any questions and help grow the game a little bit. That's what we're here for. We're here to, you know, kind of guard the game. We are the guardians of the game, man. We got to make sure that there's young coaches that are going to be here for the future generations. And if you got a question, man, just reach out and I'll help anybody and do the best I can.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.